Good morning. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine. With older people being identified as being in a high-risk group for the coronavirus, they're being impacted in very specific ways, from residential nursing homes being completely shut off from outside visitors since March to increasing reports of isolation amongst older adults. We'll hear from the local chapter of the AARP on what they're hearing and resources that are available. After that, we'll hear how the COVID-19 pandemic has impacted those re-entering society after being in jail. We'll speak with the Clinical and Reentry Services Administrator for the Community Services of Boulder County. After comments from listeners on the comment line, we'll have headlines from the BBC, followed by How on Earth. And today on our science show, Shelley Schlender speaks with Carl Safina about his new book, Becoming Wild: How Animal Cultures Raise Families, Create Beauty and Achieve Peace. At 9 o'clock, it is Alan Watts rounding out this morning's news and public affairs. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Colorado lawmakers return to the state capitol today for the first time since the legislature shut down in March due to the coronavirus pandemic. The first order of business will be to pass a budget. The state's new fiscal year begins in July, and the upcoming budget will look very different from when lawmakers first began considering it before the pandemic. State coffers are now looking at a $3.3 billion shortfall as a result of the economic impact of the coronavirus. All aspects of society will be impacted for the budget cuts, from education to healthcare. Lawmakers are not required to wear face masks at the state capitol, but many are expected to. All others entering the building will be required to wear face masks, and everyone entering the state capitol will have their temperatures checked. Social distancing will be observed in both chambers. Lawmakers in the House are expected to utilise the public gallery to allow for more spacing. Legislators will also be considering some other bills, including one that would tackle air pollution. If pollutants were eliminated from a single oil refinery in Adams County, the state could see the economic and health benefits that would be worth between $15 and $35 million each year. This is according to a new report from the Colorado Fiscal Institute. The report also highlights new Harvard research that shows that people living in highly polluted areas, disproportionately people of colour, are also more at risk of dying from COVID-19. Report co-author Raina Hetledge says that people living next to highways and industry are paying multiple costs.
You know, if you can't work one day because your child is having an asthma attack and can't be at school, you're paying for that as well in lost days that you can be at work, and your child's paying for that in lost educational opportunities.
Colorado lawmakers are considering two measures that could move the state closer to protecting residents from air pollution. House Bill 1143 would increase the amount that companies can be fined for unlawful emissions from the current maximum, which is $15,000, to just over $47,000 a day. House Bill 1265 would require companies to alert surrounding communities in real time when they exceed pollution limits. On Monday, Governor Jared Polis gave more details on further reopenings in the state. Summer camps for children will be allowed to reopen on June 1st, with several restrictions, including limits on the number of children allowed to participate. Overnight camps will have to wait until July to reopen. Some restaurants will be able to have in-house dining beginning this Wednesday. Restaurants will have to follow several rules, including limiting the number to half of the facility's occupancy, and a maximum of 50 people will be allowed in restaurants at one time. Groups would be limited to a maximum of 8 people. Outdoor seating will be encouraged where possible. Bars that don't serve food will not be allowed to reopen at this stage. In the weather today, expect highs in the mid to upper 70s with sunny skies in the forecast for the Front Range. Even warmer tomorrow, highs getting into the low 80s, but a slight chance of some thunderstorms coming in late Wednesday. Highs again in the mid 70s for Thursday, and back into the low to mid 70s for Friday and Saturday. It is 11 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. The coronavirus pandemic is impacting everybody in society, but older adults have been identified as being particularly impacted. They're in a high-risk group, and particularly residents of nursing homes are suffering from extreme levels of social isolation. Residential facilities have been completely shut off from outside visitors since March, and there are increasing reports of isolation amongst older adults across the board. Well, those are just some of the ways they're being impacted. The AARP is offering lots of resources for older adults to deal with the coronavirus pandemic. I spoke with Bob Murphy of the Colorado chapter on the very specific ways that they're seeing the impacts playing out.
So I'll start with the state budget. We have all been following the news of the impact on state revenues of this virtual shutdown in the economy. So the latest budget forecast of the state has us $3.3 billion down in from a revenue forecast that was done just, what, 3 or 4 months ago. So that represents 25% of the general fund in the state budget, 25% of the discretionary spending that the legislature has. So we are obviously concerned about the older adult services, the area agencies on aging, Medicaid, long-term services and supports, you know, nursing homes, that sort of thing. So it's as our leaders at the Capitol look to make the difficult decisions they have to make to constitutionally balance a budget, we're obviously working hard with them to make sure that an unfair share of the burden does not fall on older adults. A second issue that has been widely publicized and we've been advocating on at the state and national level is what's happening in our nursing homes or our congregate care facilities. So, you know, Colorado has shown kind of terrific leadership on that, more so than other states. But I think I saw this morning that 46% of the COVID deaths in Colorado have come in group facilities of one sort or another. And while we certainly want to make our older adult residents as safe as they can be, we also don't want them to become completely socially isolated, right? So we have been advocating for virtual visitation opportunities, you know, those sorts of things. It was appropriate at the time to restrict visitation for all the right reasons. But we applaud our governmental leadership and the nursing home industry for the adjustments that they've made to try to give for these virtual visitation options for residents and their loved ones. So that's a couple of quick things that come to mind.
Well, you mentioned what's going on with the nursing homes, and of course, you know, residential nursing facilities have really borne the brunt in many ways of this virus, and certainly when you look at the numbers of people who have died there. One concern that I have heard being raised is the fact that when we are in a situation like this, and every day we're being given data points and numbers, and then we tend to then lose sight of the humanity behind that. And so when we're constantly talking about this is a virus that most impacts the elderly and those with underlying conditions, it almost diminishes the lives. And then, of course, the deaths of those people who have died from COVID-19. And I've heard that from some older people, that they feel they're just have become lumped in with this group and has almost become a faceless entity, as if somehow they themselves have become diminished and that society doesn't almost recognize them as individuals.
Well, first of all, we certainly, you know, categorically reject any of the very few suggestions that have been made nationally that somehow older adults might be expendable or some equally awful word. That's ageism in its worst form. We couldn't agree more with your characterization about humanity and everyone. Everyone is an individual. Everyone is loved by family and friends. And I don't really feel like the lives of older adults have been diminished as a result of this. I you know, look at the silver lining, the glass half full. And I think more and more people are treasuring, you know, the collective lifetime's worth of wisdom that our older adults bring to, again, their friends and families and volunteering in their community and that sort of thing. And I actually really look at it the other way. I think in many ways, older adults are being even more valued as a result of this.
Well, I'm glad that that's something that you're hearing as well, because it does seem to be that there has been a creeping narrative coming in that some lives are more expendable than others. And you alluded to that in your answer, that there was from some and even some national leaders this idea that people should sacrifice themselves almost for the sake of the national economy. So just as a society, that we don't tend to value our older adults. I mean, certainly compared to maybe other cultures, is this an opportunity then that we really can take a hard look at ourselves as society to maybe take this as an opportunity to see the value in everybody and particularly those who are older, because as they are being more impacted, you know, this is a time to really understand that this we need to, I suppose, pull together and to really value everybody.
Yeah, I do. It's interesting. That call I was just on was with other colleagues, other state directors from the Western region in AARP. There is a state office in every state. So I was talking with folks from a number of states, but including Montana, New Mexico, Utah, and Wyoming. And we were talking about the reservations, and we were talking about how, certainly in some cases in New Mexico, the real devastation, but in many cases the topic of how much the family views or respects their elders, right? And it's just it's a part of, it's so much a part of that particular culture. We also talked about with a pretty significant Hispanic Latino population in this part of the country, how there is, again, so much family tradition and respect for elders. And part of that conversation was the kind of woefully regretting the lack of ability to get together as a family, but in the same breath, really looking forward to that opportunity, which will come sooner rather than later.
Bob Murphy is the state director, the Colorado state director of the AARP, and they have a lot of resources on their website around COVID-19, how it is impacting older adults, and particularly this issue of nursing homes. So there's a lot of information there, how to advocate for folks who are in nursing homes, how to navigate the current situation, and the website is aarp.org. It is 8:19. You're listening to KGNU. Well, all aspects of society are being impacted, including those who have recently been incarcerated. Up next, KGNU's Rosanna Longo speaks with the Clinical and Reentry Services Administrator from Community Services on Boulder County on how COVID-19 pandemic has impacted those reentering society after being in jail.
We are a part of Community Services within Boulder County, and we are the civilian arm of the justice system here in Boulder County. And so we provide a bunch of different services that help out to support individuals that, you know, found themselves in these trouble spots with the justice system. And we try to help them to figure out what's going on for them and how we can support them to get back on track and kind of get out of these behaviors that are getting them in trouble and reintegrating them with the community.
I think that at this point in time, due to COVID-19, it is really important for those that are listening to us to understand the process that it takes for somebody that has been in jail to come out and re-entry society, and the special things that that need to be done first in order for this person to go back. At the same time, now with social distancing, how those processes have changed.
Yeah, so you want me to talk a little bit about what's the process of reentry look like, and then how does it look like now with COVID-19 and social distancing? So, you know, first, it's not ever a clear-cut picture for any one person. It's not a one-size-fits-all. There's many different reasons why people end up in the justice system. And that also means there's a lot of reasons or a lot of interventions we can do to help them out and support that they need. One of the things that we've seen over time is that there's a great number of needs in the community that, for whatever reason, end up in the justice system. And so we've had to evolve to really support people in a different way than the system was originally intended to do. And the exciting thing is that there's recognition in Boulder County that that's the case. And so we're really innovative with how we try to do that. Now, with COVID-19, what makes it very difficult is, one, you don't want to have too many people in one spot. And when we think about the jail, you know, that becomes a problem. To give you an idea, when we look at the statistics, so the average daily population at the Boulder County Jail usually is between 400 and 500 folks. So in February, we averaged about 454 people. By March, we were down at 376. And so far in April, we're at an average daily population of 245. So we're almost cutting it in half, and that's because we're having to get very creative about how to not have people stay in jail, because we want to provide a safe environment for both the people that are in jail and the people that work at jail. And the way we've done that is just a lot of creativity across the system. Certain charges, certain individuals that might be in jail aren't right now. We're really ramping up our ability to use our bond system and pretrial supervision. And, you know, the challenge with that is that if somebody's coming in and out of the jail very quickly, they're getting booked and then they're getting released, we don't have the time that we usually have to sit with them, to hear their story and figure out what supports they need, which is what we usually do have. And so one of the challenges that we're being faced with is that people are coming in and out of the jail really quickly. And then we're also looking at a situation where most services in Boulder County, and I'm sure across the country, are moved to a remote system. So you're looking at services that usually you would be able to do in person, you have to do over the phone. So these are just a couple of the challenges that we're facing.
People of color going through this process, what's unique and what is different? And if you can speak about that.
You know, again, breaking down some data that we have for what it looks like in 2020, when we look at the population of individuals that find themselves in jail, this year in 2020, we're actually fairly consistent with what the population looks like. 77% are white or Caucasian. 12.5% are Latino. 7% are Black. We have 1% of Native population, 1% of Asian. And then 1% would be, you know, everything else. And, you know, one thing to keep in mind is that, you know, the way we record that, we might be missing folks that identify as mixed or other kinds of brackets that we can identify there. You know, when we think about the Latino population, one of the things that comes up, especially for our monolingual Spanish-speaking community, is that while we have resources in place and we always ensure that we can do that, there's not as many as for our individuals that speak English. So that challenge can sometimes present itself even more in a situation like this. Because the other thing that we found is that for a lot of folks in the monolingual community, once they find somebody that they trust in a professional capacity, they also tend to lean on that person to help broker other services that they might be curious about. And so, you know, we have a few individuals at the jail, both on the staff there and that may come in an interpreting kind of capacity that can assist these individuals. But now we're down to phone calls. And individuals in jail do have the ability to use phones while they're in jail. They're actually right in the modules with them, but it's limited. It's not as easy as having somebody come in, check in, see how you're doing, talk about it. And so that presents one of the challenges. The other thing that we know about some of our communities of color is that they definitely might lean on their family. They might be more communal than other folks are. And, you know, right now is a time of isolation. So visitation is happening over video. And then it's also more difficult for them to be able to reach out to their family members because they're incarcerated. And then also when they get out, because of social distancing, you know, we're not always sure where they're going to be able to land. They might not be able to go and, you know, spend time with family members they haven't seen this whole time while COVID-19 has been going on, because they don't want to put those individuals at risk. So those are some of the challenges that we're seeing. And, you know, and the traditional challenges are always going to be there for people of color in the justice system, which is a system that inherently has a lot of progress that needs to be made towards being more equitable. And that's something that's being addressed. But we have a ways to go still, looking at who ends up in jail, how do cases play out, and what can we do to make sure that we're not perpetuating a system that traditionally has not been as kind to people of color.
Marco Prospero, he's the Clinical and Reentry Services Administrator for Boulder County Community Justice Services.
It is 8:27, and it's time now for the comment line.
I would like to point out that KGNU is a center of excellence during the outbreak. I have friends who listen to other community radio stations around the country, and they report interruptions in service and deterioration of quality of music and reporting. KGNU, during this time, has had superb reportage, and the music has been wonderful. But I think the thing that strikes me the most is the quality of service and the operations. And so a big thank you to KGNU volunteers and staff.
Calling Wednesday here in the middle of the week, and BBC evening broadcast, every 20 seconds somebody's beating on drums loud, apparently from one of your studios. I mean, it's gone on for, it's about 5:30. It's been going on the whole half hour. Thank you.
Yes, hello. How you doing? This is Kelvin K-Man. And I sometimes call in to let you know I don't, some of the things you come on with, I didn't, don't care for. I won't put it that way. I disagree with. I'll put it that way. But nevertheless, I like to go ahead. I like to be able to compliment and give call in about compliments. And I want to compliment about your the news that you played from a Turkish group. Just a few minutes ago, I thought it was had a nice sound that I personally kind of rhythm that I personally like. And then Lionless and Smith, that song I grew up with, listened to on KDKL in the late 70s to early 80s. Grew up listening to that, and with Carlos Mando, got me very well introduced to jazz, and some of the music that you play reminds me of those the awesome, beautiful times at KDKL with the jazz that was with Carlos Lando and Ronnie Ashton and many of the great people that they had at KDKL, and Paul Chavez, of course. And so I want to thank you very much. Very good. And the Turkish group, I really enjoy that sound. So thank you very much.
Good morning, listeners. This is Jim, and I'm up here at Benito. I've got you on speakerphone, and so maybe you can hear the cicadas in the background or occasional footsteps of the hikers and runners. The canyon carries sounds pretty well, so I hope that you might be able to hear some of that. The birds are active, and it's a beautiful day. Anyway, what I called about was to appreciate and recognize Rosanna's piece last week with the NAACP on the Morning Magazine. It was especially important to be friendly these days, was the gist of that, was one of the things I took away from that. And since your smile is covered with a mask, I'm encouraging people to gesture a friendly wave with their hand as much as possible. And by the way, one woman up here I said hello to and waved to this morning said, "Funny you should say that, because I've been encouraging people to be friendly too." She said that with a slight concern because she had heard some people being mean and snapping at each other. Anyway, encouraging people to wave to each other and get this little joke. like surfing, I'm calling it riding the 6-foot wave. Riding the 6-foot wave. Thanks. This is James.